Weekend Breakfast with Refilwe Mpakanyane
on 702.
12 minutes past 9 on the Saturday edition of Weekend Breakfast. Let's get right into it now and talk the future of SIM safety, but looking at it through the lens of SIM swap fraud, the fact that it has been on the rise. SIM swap fraud has been around for decades. But according to the latest SABRIC figures, SABRIC, of course, being the South African Banking Risk Information Center, SIM swap incidents increased by 91% over the last year when they took a look at digital banking fraud across all platforms. And we're going to be speaking very, very shortly with the author of an article asking, why, with all the advancements in technology, are we still dealing with this relatively unsophisticated but rampant type of fraud? Really, really interesting considerations that we need to start making, as proposed by writer of this article, Lincoln Nyker, who is a product owner at Intersect. It's my pleasure to welcome Lincoln Nyker to Weekend Breakfast. Thank you so much for your time today. Good morning, Lincoln.
Good morning, Rafael. Thank you so much, and hi to you 702 listeners.
Lincoln, first of all, just give us a sense of the kind of work that you focus on, or what your work entails and what you focus on at Intersect. Just place us in terms of, you know, who you are in this security, online security and digital security landscape.
Great, thank you. So in this ecosystem of digital security and device identity, Intersect is a leading provider of strong device identity and customer authentication. So we work very closely with financial institutions, large enterprises across the globe, literally, then to communicate and secure customers, you know, making this world a safer place from a digital perspective.
So to that end, when we hear news of or read news of the South African Banking Risk Information Center warning South Africans about the pervasiveness and the rise of SIM swap fraud, especially when it comes to banking, digital banking, were you at all surprised?
So in terms of the statistics, we've seen this locally as well as internationally. So it is following an international trend where we're seeing flatlining of digital banking fraud from a mobile app point of view, for example. Mm-hmm. However, SIM swap fraud internationally, we've even seen it go up by 100%. So it is quite alarming, and the South African figures are nonetheless, it's pretty much aligning to what's happening internationally, where there's this wave of an increase in SIM swap fraud. So not really surprised, but still alarmed.
Yes, absolutely. So we know that in this this ever-increasing world of hyper-connectivity and being online, doing business online, storing information online, accessing important things like our accounts, our banking accounts, and financial services online and on devices, we're going to get to what you fundamentally propose, which is the fact that, the SIM has remained unchanged and we need to take a look at that and deal with that. But just give us a sense of how SIM swap fraud actually occurs. How does it happen? Where are the weaknesses? How clever are these criminals? What are we as consumers perhaps for? How are we falling short as consumers? I'm sure it's multiple variables going into that whole unfortunate mix.
Yeah, that's a great question. And in this ecosystem that I talk about, there's various role players. So there's the customer on one end who owns the mobile device, or, you know, there's a mobile number. But just to paint the picture, you have the mobile network providers, your mobile network operators, then you have, if it's got to do with banking, you've got the financial institution. But there are legitimate reasons, right, firstly, to conduct a SIM swap. You could have upgraded your device, your old SIM doesn't fit in, your phone could have been lost or stolen, and you need to replace your phone number and make sure you keep your phone number, you replace your SIM. So yeah, there's the legitimate side to it, but also the fraudulent side, where fraudsters impersonate yourself as a cell phone account holder and requesting a SIM swap. ultimately then to intercept phone communication, to gain access to like your banking account via internet banking or any sort of personal information that you could have. That's the ultimate intent. You know, fraudsters follow the money, and that's ultimately what they're after.
Mm. How do they imitate the consumer or the legitimate owner of that phone number or of the SIM? I've actually, now that I think about it, never had to do a SIM swap. I imagine I take along my ID book. I have to go in store personally. Is it much easier than that?
Yeah. So with digital, with COVID, there's been shifts in terms of getting customers on board, new customers, or even if you're conducting a legitimate SIM swap, mobile network providers have made it a little bit easier. But again, there's a thin line in terms of the risk associated with it. So you don't necessarily need to go in personally. You can phone in to the call center. You can actually do it via SMS in some instances, which is a pretty risky feat, right? But in terms of fraudsters, what they basically do, the modus operandi, is it's through social engineering. So social engineering is when a fraudster manipulates a customer or gets customer information and then impersonates the actual customer by phoning into a call center or, for example, a mobile network provider, and in the pretense that they're the actual customer requesting a SIM swap to take place.
All right. So sneaky enough to get you on the phone or using, as you say, social engineering to get information from you that will allow them to look legitimate as they pretend to be you. So the kind of information that they are acquiring is very specific and, of course, quite useful to that end so that for a network operator would, in fact, be convinced that it is you. So very, very personal information.
100%. And fraudsters are very targeted in their approach. So, with us being in the social media space, there's various avenues that fraudsters can get this targeted personal information. And that's through where it can be social media, it can be in the form of phishing. We've heard that term, right? So it can be clicking on a link in an email, mm-hmm. A telephone call where a fraudster is pretending to be, for example, a bank representative asking you questions, and you're actually providing your personal information to a fraudster who then uses that information to conduct a SIM swap, and then that resulting in SIM swap fraud.
Yeah. All right. So you propose, Lincoln, from your vantage point in terms of data security and device security, that we could stand to do away with some things. And one of those is one-time passwords, which when they came about seemed like a great innovation. And I guess until reading your article, I didn't quite think anything of. But of course, if someone is able to intercept get an illegal SIM swap and steal your number effectively, they're the ones that are going to get that OTP, that one-time password, and they'll be able to then transact and take money out of your various accounts. But how could companies ostensibly just do away with one-time passwords? What could be a replacement for that multi-factor authentication or multi-layer authentication that we've been told is what's, one of the best ways to protect us right now?
Yeah, so again, it's this inertia of SMS one-time passwords being the thing a few years ago, right? And you had your username, your password, and then a second factor authentication that you spoke about a bit earlier on in the form of an SMS OTP. And fraudsters know this. They know the mobile app, for example, is pretty secure. They haven't been able to hack or get through. We haven't seen any reported incidents from Sabric on that. Mm. However, they know SMS OTPs, one-time passwords, are fraud, and they attack in that direction. So the general guidance for organizations and financial institutions is to remove this reliance on one-time passwords, augmenting it or additional second-factor authentication mechanisms. So if you look at biometrics, in-app or mobile authentication, those are just some examples of how you can potentially replace SMS OTPs, or at the very least, introduce SIM swap detection, where, you know, where we as Intersect, we've seen dramatic results where we worked with companies and we've helped them to either remove SMS OTPs or introduce SIM swap detection to at least flag risky transactions or incidents where there could be a high risk of fraud taking place.
What does that SIM swap fraud in intersectional detection look like? Because I think what you pointed to a lot, as well as at the beginning of our conversation, as being a determining factor in the uptick with SIM swap fraud, not just here in South Africa, but globally, was the advent of COVID-19. And when we shut down everything hard, when we did that hard lockdown, you know, it was understandable. We didn't know how the virus was transmitted. We were speculating about, you know, whether or not or how long the virus, COVID-19 virus, stayed on surfaces, for instance. So there was real fear about venturing out, right? We know so much more right now.
Yeah.
So that can no longer be an excuse that we've let our guard down somewhat because people can't come in. We know better now. But in terms, you know, further to that point, in terms of how to intervene or intercept with SIM swap fraud, what does that look like and detect untoward activity?
Yeah. So in terms of dropping our guard, I think there's various entities that I talked about, right? So it's your the innocent or the victim that the SIM swap fraud is you know, it's taking place on, and then you have the mobile network provider who's trying to improve their customer experience, but also there's chances of risk being introduced there, and there's the financial institution that's then holding, for example, your internet banking profile, and they're making use of SMS OTP. So I've also in this article highlighted the various role players, but also there's various tips from a personal customer point of view to prevent or at least reduce your risk to for actually being a victim of some swap fraud.
I mean, it is an incredibly painful thing to experience, to get that notification, or perhaps to not get that that notification because, you know, your SIM swap, rather an illegal or fraudulent SIM swap has happened with your number, but to find out when you realize that, hang on, my phone hasn't rung all day the way it usually does, or I haven't gotten the kind of communication I usually get, and that's when you realize actually there's something wrong with my number, and then you get on the trail of investigating what's wrong. And perhaps at some point you make your way to an ATM, or you do call your bank, or you do, you know, hop online and log onto your profile and find all these transactions. The kind of recourse that one can expect when there has been SIM swap fraud, is it substantive? Is it helpful? Is it enough at this point? Of course, it's all about dealing with the problem in retrospect, and what you are mainly focusing on is prevention.
Unfortunately, being reactive around it is not ideal. We need to, again, it's a multi-layered approach where we all need to play a part in this in terms of preventing some swap fraud from taking place, or at least reducing the risk factor or an open door for fraudsters to think, hey, there's an opportunity to go in this direction. So it does require efforts from mobile networks in terms of how they're bringing in new customers or how they actually approve some swaps in the first place. It does require effort from organizations or financial institutions to, as I talked about a little bit earlier on, reduce the usage of SMS OTPs, bring in additional forms of authentication, work with fintechs. So there's various layers, but also from the end customer point of view is to be a lot more vigilant. Unfortunately, we are in a world where with technological advances, that's also evolving into fraudsters, you know, being ahead of the curve and knowing how they can get a hold of customers, spamming customers and getting your personal information. So there's definitely two sides to that coin.
You know, you speak of the end user and the customer, and it really makes me think of an internet and a data privacy conversation that we had on the show quite a while back. But this one related to parents, you know, putting personal information or intimate information, that children's intimate information, online, thinking that they're sharing, thinking that it's cute. But, you know, a warning coming that actually a lot of this kind of online behavior might affect your child's data privacy later on in life, because we know that a lot of this multi-factor authentication involves things like, what is your first puppy's name or your first dog's name? Or, you know,
it's recovery methods, right? So one of the things around protecting your personal information, you know, is having a strong password. But how many times do we put in an easy recovery method if you forget your password?
Yeah.
And fraudsters can easily extract that from what you post on social media. So you have to be very careful around that.
Sure. All right. So a message of vigilance there coming through from Lincoln Nyker. But of course, also, I guess, a message of hope, Lincoln, that if we just think about exactly what we're doing online and are just a little bit more cognizant of how fraudsters are operating, then we'll be that much safer. Thanks for your time and your insights today.
Thank you so much.
All right. Lincoln Nyker is a product owner at Entersect.